Coming up, it's Media Matters with Marie Buskey and Marty Gibson, discussing the media through the RCR lens,
right here on Reality Check Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Media Matters for another week. You're here with Marie Buskey. And of course, this is your time for a little M&M love with Marie and Marty. How are you, Marty?
I am Bonza, Marie, back from a weekend on the Gold Coast, my sister's 50th birthday, which was, it was good to actually get a little bit of just that Australian carefree positivity. It was like slipping into a warm bath after walking on the gravel over here.
Yes, you sent me a picture. I text you just check in to see how it was going, and you sent me almost a Ricky Gervais-esque pool photograph, but looking very happy and relaxed. So how's the mood? You know, because we've done this before. We've talked about this before when you've popped over there and come back. Give me a quick sort of elevator picture of the difference between the mood there versus the mood here. Optimistic, pessimistic, better, worse, same.
Optimistic, better. Whenever you go to an Australian city, I'm not all, you know, like some of them are suffering at the hands of the left's attempt to tear nations to bits, to install a form of global technocracy. But when you go to, I was in the Gold Coast, on the Gold Coast specifically, visiting, you know, both my brother and my sister who live there and just never want to go back.
Mm.
A lot of very happy, smiley Maori, you know, who love it there, and just everyone pretty pleased not to be at each other's throats. And you know, there's that feeling of civic integrity, you know, public things like barbecues, and you know, the place looks really clean. Looks like they use fossil fuels judiciously to create a high standard of living for their citizens, you know, a lot of new things being built, as I mentioned. But it was a very pleasant, horrible, horrible trip there. I had to get up at 12:30 on Thursday and drive up to Auckland for a 7 o'clock flight and then arrive back at midnight on Monday morning and got home about 4 a.m. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to a direct flight from either Rotorua or Tauranga.
Mm. It all sounds like it's so old fashioned, isn't it? You know, we have these conversations, and I think this is the theme that I saw in the papers really across the weekend, because I'm feeling the cultural tides have certainly turned, and it's amazing to see people's reaction to it, the media's reaction to it, and also forgetting, I think, we're starting to remember, some people have forgotten actually what it's like to be in places like the Gold Coast, where you have this optimism, where you have this sense of community, where you're trying to pull together, you're a strong and rugged individual, but you're also more than the sum of your parts and all of those things. And we've forgotten, I think as a nation, we've kind of forgotten a lot of that a little bit. We've lost our way during the Ardern years, and we still quite haven't found our way out of the wilderness.
Yeah, we certainly haven't picked, you know, we've gone from one person you'd never pick as a leader in a survival situation, Chris Hipkins, or Jacinda Ardern for that matter, to another person you'd never pick in a survival situation, you know, David Brent, Christopher Luxon. And I mean, it's worth remembering, you know, the most death and destruction occurs when a tsunami is going out. So that's something to bear in mind. I mean, you know, Biden's busy trying to start World War III, and that's not really talked about with the gravity, I didn't think, in any media I saw, that it should.
No, and I'm talking later today with Matt Robson. This is actually one of the topics of conversation we're going to have, and as well as the media coverage of this entire situation since February 22. So I'm really looking forward to that conversation, and I've been doing some prep in regards to that. And of course, looking at that announcement made by Biden that they've now finally given permission to fire these missiles. I mean, how anybody can't see that this isn't a Cold War, let's be Cold War, that's been going on for two freaking years. I mean, wow, really? You know, and so he finally says, as his little dottering parting shot, as he's, you know, toddling out the door to change his incontinence pants, and here, crickets.
If you extrapolate it out, I mean, Alex Jones has been saying this for some time. They're going to try and start World War III. They're going to have the internet go out or something, blame it on Russian agents, arrest Trump, suspend the appointment of the new government because they frame them up for being in collusion with America's national enemy, and we really go into deep state purgatory.
Well, and Trevor Loudon presaged it as well. You know,
I haven't caught that yet. How was that?
It was great. It was great. We chopped through all the appointments as they were at the time because I spoke to him very, very early Friday morning, and it was obviously RFK Jr.'s appointment was made later that day. It was great. Him and I didn't see eye to eye in one of them, which is good. You know, it's good to do that, isn't it? Isn't it nice where you don't see eye to eye? I sort of said, this is why I like this person. He was like, this is Tulsi Gabbard we're talking about. He's like, no, I can't stand her. In fact, I said, well, you know, who do you think would have been a better appointment? Or's my dog.
Well, what doesn't he like about Tulsi Gabbard? Because I happen to really like her as well. I mean, you and I both think.
Yeah, no. So as you know, Trevor is an expert in the whole Marxist and Maoist political machinery. He has dedicated decades to its research. He knows every tentacle, every connection of anybody in the political sphere around that space. And he believes that she is ostensibly a communist plant there to sell Marxism or Maoism in its soft Hawaiian form to the masses via a Trump cabinet. He has actually written about her connections and the connections that still continue this day in his book in 2020. So he's put it out there in bona fides, but that's his belief. He does also concede that he is an outlier on this opinion. He does. He said he's certainly not in the consensus on this. And he would, you know, he did say to me as well, he'd love to be wrong and right, but you know, I have to respect that with Trev. He certainly doesn't make a position lightly. So it's going to be a watch the space.
I'd be really interested in having a look at, certainly in the first instance, I have listened to that interview.
But he also talked about exactly what you said. He talked about that there will be something that will happen in this lame duck period, escalation of an international conflict to potentially a world war.
Fits the bill. Oh, no. So, yeah, there was a lot of Trump derangement syndrome. I was saying beforehand, most of my reading's been in two categories, either the Trump effect, so I'm looking at the left going crazier and crazier and putting the bollocks into hyperbolic. Sasha Borisenko, just when you thought things couldn't get worse, they did. Donald Trump had twice impeached former United States president and billionaire with a portion for sexual misconduct. She's got another one of those fringes that's like a red stripe on the back of a spidey. It's like, oh, soon. Stay away from that. It's like a bear trap just waiting to be violently offended and emotionally incontinent. Anyway, Steve Joyce had a bit as well, didn't he?
Yeah, because I've got a bit of highlighter there. So let's start there for a change.
All right.
So Stephen Joyce, and so we can show everybody that we do actually read off Real Actual for Realsies newspaper. What New Zealand can learn from Trump version 2.0. Opinion, Stephen Joyce, former National Party Minister in Finance and Minister of Transport, started out in typical Joyce fashion. And he says here, sure, in 2016, Trump was the antidote to the Clintons, and in particular, the widely disliked Hillary. Back then, he was also an unknown quantity. Now, there's no excuse. All of us who lived through Trump 1.0 saw up close his foibles and weaknesses in an erratic soap opera-like performance that culminated in self-absorbed inability to accept the defeat in 2020. And yet, Americans put him back into office 4 years later. Emphatically, what is going on? There are plenty of triumphant MAGA hat wearing ex-warriors trumpeting the dawn of the age of the Enlightenment with an all-knowing I told you so attitude. However, in my experience, partisans of both sides are not the most calm and reflective when their tribe wins. For the rest of us, it's worth trying to divine what all this means for both the world we live in and for our little outpost in the South Pacific. The first lesson might be the now age-old truth in politics. It's the economy, stupid.
Mm.
Now, I mean, I know that there's been a lot said around how things were won and lost, and also in the paper, and I can't remember who wrote it. I've got it in the pile there. It was a reprint anyway out of the Washington Post or New York Times, potato, potato, of, again, why did women vote for Trump? And the article was reflecting, why did women vote for Trump when he's a supposed sexist and against Roe v. Wade? And it's because they actually have forgotten the point that women aren't necessarily completely concerned 100% all of the time about their reproductive rights. In an exit poll, only 11% of them, that was their main issue. They are actually worried about things like the economy, like putting food on the table, keeping a roof over their children's head, making sure their kids can go to school and be well educated, making sure that they're not going to be beaten up, murdered or killed, getting from point A to point B, and that they can have a happy, prosperous life. Shocker. What a really weird old-fashioned notion that is, Marty.
Well, it's so weird, you know, seeing the refugees welcome clique of women in Europe, because it's like, well, you know, I'm immune to a far greater degree than they are, accepting that I have a wife and daughters, you know, which I'd be concerned about on that basis. But yeah, it's that, what's it called, pathological altruism, and this need to make sure things are fairly distributed, which is probably a biological imperative of women, that leads them to disproportionately vote for more government and less freedom. But Stephen Joyce finished up, the world is entering uncharted territory. It's apparent already the Trump team is ready to govern this time around, which it wasn't in 2016. A steady stream of appointments from the sensible to the bizarre offer a precursor to what lies ahead. That means we'll truly find out whether the MAGA economic prescription works or it doesn't. Personally, I think it is a doomed attempt to wind back the clock to a world that doesn't exist anymore, but we shall see. Now, Stephen Joyce, I really enjoy your take on things, but we must remember how little your key government did with the great amount of political capital it had, how apparently visionless it was, to the extent that the big political change that you guys wanted to champion was the flag. You wasted a lot of opportunity, and I think you're missing the point. In some ways, we've already seen this movie, the advertised economic prescription of the Trump administration, although with a different reason for the big deficits, has many strands in common with the Ardern-Hipkins government of New Zealand, and we know how that ended. I think there's an ambition inherent in the Trump prescription, whereas Ardern's was this blandifying desire for grey, for equity, which has been written, and we can come to that later on, written into the Constitution through activist judges that were given tacit permission.
To me, that was almost an expression of his little subtle bits of form of Trump derangement syndrome that he went to that National comparison.
Did just as much borrowing under your government, buddy.
Yeah.
Like you started a lot of that.
I found that his final paragraphs were quite ironic, considering about three or four paragraphs previous. He says, for New Zealand, it means we're going to have to be more adept and more agile than normal. I often think of us like nuggety little first 5/8s on the world stage, spotting the gaps and looking to get over the advantage line without getting a king hit. We're going to need all that skill and more to avoid being inadvertently squashed between the superpowers over the next 4 years. Oh, I'm sorry, Stephen. That was so 1990s, my darling. You know, that ability.
That's a world that doesn't exist anymore,
yeah,
Stephen.
That died with us Gen Xers, because these millennials that are running the world now, who are coming up and through, there's nothing nifty and nuggety about them. They've lost courage. They've lost, you know, it's all about me. It's all about my sweat out. It's all about me. And then to turn around and say that Trump is going to, that Marga Economica is not going to work. I wondered whether there was a little bit of sour grapes and he's potentially a wee bit jealous, but I don't know.
Well, yeah.
I don't do. Anyway, so then you have, I'm going to follow your prescription this week because you've sort of gone down and followed a couple of routes, and because I know that when we get to eventually we're going to get to, I'm going to get quite ranty. So.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, I think it's worth bringing up World War III again. You know, just like, let's remember how we don't want that, and the fact that the media and politicians are not saying, hey, whoa, stop. You know, we've got two geriatric old men of dubious mental capacity, to put it lightly, apparently orchestrating this, but we've got the war hawks behind them. I mean, Donald Trump Jr. tweeted that the military-industrial complex seems to want to make sure they get World War III going before my father has a chance to create peace and save lives. So he did this on Sunday. Immediately after, reports of the serious policy shift emerged, and House Representative Thomas Massie has ripped Biden again, once again circumventing Congress on matters of war, calling the decision an unconstitutional act of war that endangers the lives of all U.S. citizens. We've got Mitch McConnell in there again, who's another person who is well past his use-by date. You know, men whose lives probably have got about 2 or 3 years more to run making these decisions. And it's a white knuckle ride.
And I mean, I think McConnell's deficits are actually even greater than Biden's, and that's saying something. And that's even without getting into George Soros, who's been a puppet master in all of these global affairs for what, 30, 40, 50
and
years?
A jumped up little son, Alex Soros. God, what a prat that little fella is. Yeah, the other thing I've seen from the Trump effect was there's a renewed focus on the burden of the public sector and the need to reduce it. And I mean, yeah, we're going to hopefully have more viewing the national government's limp-wristed little patterings around the edge of the bloated public service. Maybe seeing them for what they are, which is far too little. We're going to really see some decisiveness under, you know, if we've got Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk running it, it's going to be interesting. If the interview Vivek Ramaswamy did with Tucker Carlson's anything to go, I mean, they're talking about a 90% reduction in headcount in some areas and moving government departments out of Washington.
Well, when you think about it, they can actually do that. They can do it because they are the United States of America, which means that so much governance already sits within the state model under governors and under their own legislatures in each individual state. So by taking an absolute, well, let's say not chainsaw because that's malaise, so by taking the machete to the federal mechanisms and looking at all those federal budgets and going, okay, what is it from a federal level we really, really need? Then I think that, yeah, they could actually really slash and burn and create a lot more wealth or redistribute those funds, whether it be to their massive debt, because no one seems to be talking about the debt that they've racked up.
That's the number one cost now.
Ooh.
It's eye-watering. I don't even got a figure for it. But Regulations Minister David Seymour, and this is from RCR Bytes, which actually is, for those of you who are not Foundation members, it's a fantastic summary of the news. It really is all you need to get a really good balanced view of what's going on. And Ali, who reads the news, which largely comes from the Bytes, there are times I've been listening to The Breakfast Show and I've heard the news come on. I just think, this news is so awesome. It hasn't got the angles that I'm normally seeing. It's nice and balanced. But yeah, Regulations Minister David Seymour has launched an online portal for public submissions, inviting Kiwis to share red tape horror stories. Seymour said the economic impact of excessive compliance was $5 billion each year and was linked with low wages. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how empowering what they're doing in the States is here. I think Nationals, I think a lot of their votes quite soft. I think there's a danger that that well, for them, at least, I think it's a great opportunity for New Zealand.
Well, it's interesting. So there's two things on that point. Thing number one, isn't it interesting that we now have a snitch line? A snitch line on the public service makes a complete 180 from the snitch line that we had for people talking to their neighbours during, you know,
yes,
during the lockups. Anywho,
source for the gander.
Yes. The other thing too, Shane Tupou, you actually just touched on a point there that he touched on, and there was a lot I agreed with in Shane's column this week, and one of the things he talked about was Seymour's play. He sees this as Seymour's seeing the weakness in Luxon and that he is going after that soft national voter base. Hardcore.
Well, watch the space. I guess we'll skip through this because we'll get to the hikoi sooner. So the other thing is the tide seems to be going on LGBTQAK, the drive. People, including AOC, quietly removing their pronouns. Corporates in Australia pulling out of sponsoring gay festivals. So supermarket giant Coles is not providing money to the Wagga Wagga Mardi Gras this year. While Charles Sturt University is undecided, Rainbow on the Plains and Hay has had major sponsors pull out. So that's, again, the tide's going out. It's most dangerous when it's going out. So, yeah, misinformation. There's the other misinformation bleating from the media didn't work and they're licking their wounds. The Australian government can't pass its misinformation bill without the support of four of the seven senators on the crossbenches, and now every single one of those has come out against the bill. So it's Senator David Vann, who's got a pretty checkered past, to be fair, said he'd had a change of heart. Upon further examination of the bill, it has significant flaws and I will not be supporting it. At first glance, it seemed reasonable, but there are such significant defects that it should not pass as drafted. So that'll be interesting to watch. Climate agenda seems to be cooling. And this is from Carbon Brief, with tension mounting across the fortnight of the talks. This is from COP24. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres had to visit the COP several times to force progress. Despite settling on large parts of the Paris rulebook, countries failed to agree the rules for voluntary market mechanisms, pushing part of the process onto next year's COP25 in Chile. Now, did you catch Jamie Morton's climate impoverishment cheerleading article?
I scanned it, yeah, because of course again, I'm trying to look after my blood pressure and dyspepsia, right, Marty. But anyway, no, I did. Oh, good grief. Yeah.
Yeah, earlier this year, it was revealed New Zealand is millions of tons off target for meeting its third emissions budget, the five-year period to 2035. Watts said the new plan would ensure the country was back on track to meeting targets. We're obviously, I don't know what he sounds like, so any imitation of his accent, a mere guess. We're obviously going to be leveraging the emissions trading scheme to do the heavy lifting on aspects outside of agriculture. The government has controversially exempted agriculture, responsible for half our gross emissions, from the ETS, but still wants to introduce a pricing system for the sector by 2030. Now, this doesn't mean that we've gotten agriculture out of our Paris Accord commitments. It just means that the government, which means taxpayers, often with borrowed money, are going to subsidize it. We need to get it out.
Yeah, it needs to be gone.
Yeah, gone. It's not in the Paris Accord. We've already got, I'm going to keep saying this, $30 billion of liabilities. It's going to $70 billion. And the media is absolutely silent on it because the people who, people can repeat after me at this point, the people who print the money, that own the private equity firms, that own the corporations, that do the advertising, own the media outlets, decide that it's really good if they've got a financial market that taxpayers have to borrow from them to pay into that's got a 65 to 90% fraud rate. Suits them just fine. Green Party leader Chloe Swarbrick said it would be laughable for Watts to think that decision alone wouldn't attract criticism at Baku. This was climate advocates also shamed New Zealand with the fossil of the day. This was from last year over the coalition government's decision to reverse the ban on offshore oil and gas exploration. Excuse us for turning the heaters on. growing?
Well, I mean, again, you know, that sort of stuff, like that fossil of the day and all the rest of it, all of that is as you've often said, that is a club and you're not in it. And that is just these shame tactics. It's a whole sort of mean boys and girls of the climate world, peer pressure. It's juvenile.
G-F-Y-S. That's what I say to them. Go f*** yourselves. Says that illegal immigration is finally being talked about as a national security threat. You know, Trump's saying he wants to get rid of the birthright citizenship, which was provided by the 14th Amendment. There's some pretty good commentary saying, you know, you need to get 3/4 of Congress to agree to that. It's probably not going to happen. And so, yeah, that's my kind of summary of the other news. Let's talk about the hikoi if you want, unless you got something
else.
Yeah,
no, let's talk about the hikoi because, I mean, we avoided, well, we didn't avoid it. We touched on it last week. And of course, it happened this week. I was in Hastings on the weekend and going to Red Remembrance because it was the 3-day anniversary of the announcement, the implementation of the mandates. So there was a Red Remembrance gathering. And it was absolutely so cold. Oh my gosh. It was super, super, super frigid and cold. And there was about 4 dozen of us there at that with thousands of hikoi protesters in Hastings. So we were tucked in our little corner and they were all in theirs. And I have to, the one thing I like, let's start with the positives. The one thing I like is that there is something rousing about when Māori come together in solidarity over anything. It is potent, it is powerful, and it is impactful.
Well, if you've played on a rugby team with Māori, most, you know, New Zealand men have, you feel that. You feel how great it is to be a part of it. It's awesome. It's invigorating.
It is something that was embodied within the Māori battalions of the Second World War. I mean, yep. It is really something that is quite special.
We love a common enemy.
And that's and in that is this. So there was lots of calls and chants for Tēnā Rangatiratanga. And what I have to say to Māori is I actually thought, you know, there were some really powerful moments, some great unity, some great solidarity you were pulling together. Now, whether or not you actually all understood what you're pulling together for, that's by the by, I think. But when it comes to that Tēnā Rangatiratanga, that sovereignty, look inwards, guys, because that sovereignty sits with you. And it always has sat with you. It's always been who you are. That's never going to change. That's never going to be taken away. It sits with you. And then like ripples in a pond, it sits with your immediate family. It sits with your hapū. It sits with your wider community, with your marae. If you can take that energy that you brought to the hikoi and turn it inwards on yourselves and say, okay, what are the issues we're dealing with here? How do we make these better, then you're onto something. Do not be led round by the nose by Te Pāti Māori, because what essentially this is a Te Pāti Māori organised publicity stunt.
Kia ora, Busky, kia ora.
Anyway, I've written lots of things down. You're going to have to stop me, Marty. Say something before I get
even. Well, I mean, I have to search my own prejudices to get an objective view of this issue, because the truth is I don't like the people organising the march. I find their bullying, threatening, posturing activates my own willingness to use violence, which was necessary to deal with Māori bullies, the only kind I knew at school. I've seen it before. I've seen this show. When I see the haka and aggressive posturing in Parliament, I think of the terrible statistics for violence that Māori have in terms of murdering and abusing children and in society at large. There's a graph I've shared extensively which showed acts intended to cause injury per 100,000 in ethnic groups for the year to March 2023. And it shows that Māori committed 954 such acts per 100,000 people, while Europeans were offending a little less than 14% of that rate at 133 per 100,000. Have a hikoi about that, as you say. You know, look in the mirror. Make some serious effort to decrease it. And I'd take Te Pāti Māori calls to have more power, more seriously and warmly. Instead, the message I hear from them is, give us what we want and we won't be violent. And, yeah, that doesn't work, because fawning to bullies only makes them worse. And it does not provide a stable platform upon which to build a nation that's a place of safety and prosperity. Mm. I believe that the protest movement, as I've said before, is a chimera. Perhaps it has a Maori heart, but it seems to have an Islamic head and a Maoist body. And that is deeply concerning to me because I see both as violent, regressive, and destabilizing forces in the modern world. And lastly, I'll just say I find the lopsided coverage in New Zealand's state-owned media, particularly in the sight of police helping to paint banners at the hikoi, deeply troubling. Perhaps the problem that Te Pāti Māori have articulating concerns about the Treaty Principles Bill is the same problem that Don Brash has articulating the counter-argument. They're both almost cartoonish representatives of their side, and while they may rally passion on their own side, they're more likely to repulse rather than persuade their opponents. So I'm trying to stay engaged with the issue, but I can't help think that there are a few bridges that need to be built before we can cross them here. Mm. That's my take.
I think it's always good to look at the age-old question, cui bono, who benefits? And if Te Pāti Māori in this is run, organised by Te Pāti Māori, they are set to benefit. And I think you've also come up with their policies.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
running
it's
on.
Really instructive beyond all the performative theatre to understand what these people want. You know, it's... And I guess they'd argue, well, we're activists and we just got to push it right out there and maybe we'll get a little bit of movement. But, you know, if I got exactly what I want, things would be better for all New Zealanders. But this is what Te Pāti Māori want. They want to establish a Māori parliament, implement all Matiki Mai recommendations for constitutional transformation, remove the British royal family as head of state, recognise Aotearoa as the country's official name, return the foreshore and seabed to mana whenua, Māori, essentially. Return all central and local government land to mana whenua. Return all conservational land to mana whenua. Introduce a first right of refusal policy for mana whenua on all private land.
Oh, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. End all land sales to foreign interests to be replaced by leasehold estates only. End perpetual leases. End the fiscal envelope, insert relativity clauses into all te tiriti settlements retrospectively, make Waitangi Tribunal recommendations binding on the Crown, and implement all unaddressed Wai claim recommendations. So that's a pretty dead giveaway that the Waitangi Tribunal is rigged, because otherwise, you know, obviously they anticipate they're going to agree with everything they say. Abolish full and final and large natural groupings settlement policies, entrench the Māori electorates, legislate for all local and regional councils to have both Māori wards and mana whenua representation, establish a parliamentary commissioner for Te Tiriti or Waitangi to provide oversight of the Crown's annual performance and complying with Te Tiriti. If you substituted white Afrikaners for mana whenua, you know, it's hard not to understand why some people say what they're proposing is apartheid, because it kind of is.
Well, and for all of those useful idiots that have gone along, because this is, you know, the cause du jour, from their lovely homes and leafy suburbs as they drop off the children, are you prepared to hand all of that over? Because that's essentially what's been asked for. That's the cause you're supporting.
Yeah, it's no accident that Muppy Clark wears a beret that's like Julius Mbappe, who liked to chant to his poorly educated crowds, "Kill the Boer, shoot, shoot." It's coming from pretty much the same place.
Mm-hmm.
The threats of violence mask pretty poorly a genuine desire for... I think we should start taking them at their word.
Mm. Meanwhile, all Seymour is calling for is complete and equal equality for all New Zealanders on the land. Mm. Yeah, sometimes you actually need to dig a little bit deeper and see, because that's just it. Where does it stop? It stops when you get your laundry list of things that you want. That's the laundry list of things that they want.
Yeah, there's nothing about better education in there. There's nothing about reducing rates of domestic abuse or improving the health outcomes for children. Any of the things that would make pretty fast inroads into a lot of the problems that Māori have.
Mm.
Well, their answer is, we've got to, once we're chiefs again and you fellows are our slaves, we can take the fruits of your labour without reciprocity. We can denigrate your whakapapa on the basis of some past utu. And if we have a child with you, then that child has our mana, so they're not a taurekareka, they're not a slave.
Mm.
I've said it before, the problem that is experienced by a lot of Māori as Pākehā racism, I think in many cases, is just the visceral reaction that people with a proud history of abolishing slavery have and abolishing tyrants to being talked to like they're a slave by people who want to be tyrants and say, we want to be tyrants.
Absolutely. I looked at this with my cultural lens on, okay? And I have done so much work in this space now over the last 6 years. This is a dangerous distraction, people. This is critical race theory wrapped up in a korowai, being monetized and Māori being commoditized by those into party Māori and those who run to party Māori. There are companies that have been formed. There are trusts that issued vast sums of money, millions and millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars to deliver services, in inverted commas, to Māori on the basis of their victimhood. This is critical race theory. This is Marxism. This is
Maoism in particular, isn't it? Yeah. The groups and the young, I mean, their little red army, they're explicit about that. This is the Kohangareo generation. These are the dogs that the puppies Napoleon's trained to be attack dogs. And getting back to that, the state media commentary on this, just the wrongness about it. It's not the debate. It's like, they want to abolish the treaty. It's like, well, how can we have a debate if that's not what's going on?
No.
If they want to define the principles, and we can go through this. So yeah.
Yeah, we will. And just before we jump off that too, and the other group that was in that mass, right? So you had a lot of Māori come together and pull themselves together. And I mean, let's face it, when you get it across all these different tribes that pull together under one banner, that is actually quite unusual because often a lot of these tribes are not getting along. So that in itself is a very powerful motivation. The problem is that motivation comes from a place of, I believe, grave dishonesty and people wanting to make money off the back of you. So, Māori be warned. And not all Māori are on board with this either. There were plenty off to one side saying, hey, no, we're not down with this.
Not widely reported in the media. Not reported at all.
Then you have all the other useful idiots who were running around and with their tēnā rangatira tanga t-shirts on and waving their wee flags.
Born in Pākehā women. Oh, I'm an ally.
Yeah, they're just basically lurching from one crisis to another. And I think at the end of the day, they're being part of a protest to try and appease themselves from the defeat that's happened in the United States, and all they're doing is making themselves feel better. Fine. You went to Parliament, you had a nice time, you got all the, you pulled lots of people together, and let's face it, with all the public service people that have been fired, you had nothing better to do of a day. Lovely. Well done. But you're right. And for years, we've had this mis- and disinformation shtick rammed down our throats by the likes of the Disinformation Project. Thank good riddance, it's a bad rubbish, I say. And yet, here you have an entire march and a protest and a group who have literally been spilling rumours and lies about what is going on. And it's farcical. It's farcical. I think anybody watching with a little bit of perspective will be looking at this going, what?
Well, I said it, it was a chimera, which is like a griffin or something. It's a mix of animals. And I said it had an Islamic head. And, we've spoken before about how, a lot of Māori went to Libya. Dona Awatere Huata went to Libya. So they've studied that and been schooled up in those Marxist, revolutionary, Islamic-tinged ways of war, basically.
Yeah. Well, and also look at the BLM riots of 2020. That's straight out of the Apale book. And those founders, avowed Marxists, they're open out and out, not even trying to hide
and
it. Marxist grifters with multi-million dollar properties and more than one of them. Now, who does that sound like here? Anyway, I digress.
I mean, Shane Jones is like, yeah, I just keep tweeting. That sense of bewilderment that I feel when I realize Shane Jones is probably my favorite Kiwi politician. It's tough to, I've said to Glenn Inwood's quite a, good friendly with Shane. I said, I'd love to meet him at some point and have a chat because he's been comforting with his forthrightness and his eloquence. And he wrote a column in Monday's Herald, I don't know if you caught it, players justifying their actions as being honourable and for the greater good of Rome, or in this case, Aotearoa or New Zealand, depending on your political diet. Although we all know the Treaty Principles Bill will not pass, the two sides of the argument are confident they are saving the Republic. The international image of all our MPs as being pickled in a solution of division, ignominy, and parliamentary trashing. A problem of House management and political duplicity. Hezbollah-loving Greens and impotent Labour applaud this tainting of the highest court in the land. New Zealand First, and this is where, the New Zealand First are the sleepers in all this, because this paragraph gives you an idea of what may happen once people have kind of built up that head of disdain for the antics of Te Pāti Māori. Maybe Luxon's playing more 4D chess than we think, 3D chess. New Zealand First will prune treaty references and deliver a statutory haircut to the Waitangi Tribunal. It is rubbish to call this a cancellation of Māori identity or the actual treaty. Neither the modern far right or far left can reword our foundation document. The Māori Party say that our legislature must bow down to the treaty. Well, at least their interpretation of it. Fortunately, the legitimacy of Parliament lies with all the people. It is their House of Representatives, a truism beyond the grasp of the Waitangi Tribunal.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. Did you catch Bryce Edwards' summation on all of this as well?
No.
So it's called Democracy Briefing, New Zealand's Populist Movement. But what you've just read is in the final paragraph of his piece. Finally, Seymour's bill is not the only treaty principles related work underway. Justice Minister Paul Goldsmith is proceeding with the agreement between National and New Zealand First to remove provisions to the principles of the treaty in 28 key pieces of legislation. Goldsmith has indicated that some may have their relevance to the treaty made explicit and others might be scrapped altogether.
Isn't that interesting? I think you heard it on Media Matters.
Which is why part of me does wonder. Yes, exactly. And Seymour's loving all of this. Luxon didn't go out and see the protesters at all. He just was like, not interested. Move along. These are not the droids you were looking for. Seymour, honestly, was like a puppy. He was so excited. And he was sort of trying to, I think, have that look of gravitas about him. But he's loving this, and he's going to love the entire select committee process and all of this entails, because he's patient and he's tenacious. I think part of him knows that while he's now got 6 months of undivided sheep attention from the media, that's only going to, I think, strengthen brand Seymour and brand ACT. And National, I think, have been left out in the cold here. They're the losers in all of this, and so are Labor. There is a core of Labor supporters, which are part of those useful idiots that are running around in the T-shirts that don't actually have any skin in this game whatsoever, or the Māori voters that they used to once have, and Te Pāti Māori are now...
Well, Heather Duplessy Allen outlined that very... eloquently, just saying, why would Christopher Hipkins agree to go in a Te Pāti Māori hikoi? because they're the biggest impediments to Labor getting elected. Certainly taking all their Māori seats off them. But the hikoi is unlikely to impress middle New Zealand voters.
No, but then Chris Hipkins has the gall to say, quoted, if you talk to any New Zealander on the street, they'll tell you that they're not in support of this. They're not in support of this at all. Chris Currier did a poll. 46% are in support of the principles bill. 46%.
Getting back to my experience with Māori bullying at high school, the natural relationship between a spotty, effeminate ginger boy and Māori is bullied and bullier. And it appears in politics that that relationship transformed somewhat to puppet and puppeteer. Someone's got their hand up his ass making his lips move.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you a little story, and it's from many years ago, and it's where our oldest son popped off to intermediate for the first time. He's often referred to, and has been for forever, as the ginger. He has got a very large swathing mop of very fiery red hair, and he was a slight little chap, and he popped off to intermediate, but he was quite fiery. And he popped off to intermediate. He was confronted by a much larger boy who was also a Māori boy who and he obviously saw this tiny little curly haired ginger kid and thought, whew, and really got up in his grill. And we knew how fiery the ginger was, and we'd said to the school at the time, look, with all everything going on,
don't poke him with a stick,
if he feels like he's backed into a corner, he will come out swinging. So don't back him into a corner, because that's a dangerous thing to do. So anyway, this kid decided to bully our ginge and actually started physically chest bumping him. And he's trying to hold firm and not lose his temper. And chest bumping him.
Hearing your voice on his shoulder.
Then finally. Our little ginge, this kid went too far. So he took a couple of swings at him, a couple of fair little swings, and clocked him fair and square in the nose, gave him a blood nose. So off to the principal that they were dragged. Dad, Mr. Marie, he was the one that sort of was on pickup that day and got called to go and collect. I was at work. All I got told, so I came home and I said to Ginge, I said, is everything okay? And he said, Mum, all you need to know is he started it, I finished it. And I thought, oh, okay. Then have a meeting with a school. And the one thing I'll never forget that the assistant principal said to me, she said, Marie, she said, we've sorted it out internally. It's an internal matter. You don't need to worry about anything. But off the record, I don't think your son's going to have a single problem with bullies ever again. She said,
yeah.
You got to stand up to them, and that's what he did.
You have that moment. I had that moment, got sort of shoulder bumped in a corridor, and just it was when I was, I'd probably a bit hangry because I'd swum about 4 kilometres that morning before school and hadn't gotten a chance to eat my lunch through class, but just was suddenly over, probably a jolt of testosterone, overcome with rage, and just like a sort of a boulder that's, you're pushing off the side of a hill, just slowly started moving towards the sky, and just think, use that beep again. I'm gonna mess you up, man. And he just started laughing and ran away. Same thing. I didn't have the problems. And so, yeah, that the posturing, Debbie Ngarewa Paka, making a gun sign at Seymour. I just like you cut that out before I'm going to take you seriously. Let's build a bridge before we can get over it.
Yeah.
Because that's not it.
No. And Shane Jones, of course, called for, and he is calling for, the Privileges Committee and looking at all of the behaviour. I mean, look at the standards, the drop of behaviour that has happened in the House since Te Pāti Māori have been there, particularly in this term. All of this has got to stop. I mean, I have to admit, the priceless apoplectic look on Jerry Brownlee's face when Anna Maipi Clark started her haka.
A couple of people behind in a buffet and someone was getting her something that he particularly wanted.
Oh, I was sitting there thinking, careful, Jerry, you're not potentially in the place to raise your blood pressure like this, my son.
This is the Islamic head, you know, will just erupt with sacred anger at the slightest little slight that goes against them, but quite comfortable shitting all over however many years, 500 years, 600 years of parliamentary custom that indicates you don't take weapons in, and it's, as the name suggests, a place to talk, a place for reasoned debate, not violent threats, you know? And it's a tradition that has worked very well for Western civilization, albeit a little bit cliched in terms of there's always two teams, one's blue and one's red. And, you know, whoever you vote for, government always seems to win. But, you know, apart from that.
So if you're somebody who's looking at all this HECL stuff and you're finding that your blood pressure is getting up, going up, and you're sort of trying to navigate through everything, take the zoom out and actually look at the wider thing. This is a grift. It's a grift. You've got some really good people who are being manipulated by some at the top who are wanting to create a grift in order to line their own pockets. It's as simple as that. And then on the other side, you've got a whole bunch of political power playing going on. And at the end of the day, is this going to make either your life or my life any better? No. So park it.
Even for you, Māori, eh, Marie?
Especially for Māori. And if you're wanting to make your lives better and you're wanting to grasp it, tēnā ranga, tērā tanga, yep, pop it, take a look at the mirror, look at yourselves and go, right, what can I do to make my life better today? And start there. And you're going to feel a whole bunch better. Honestly, trust me on that one. You're going to feel a whole bunch better. If you think that you have to look to government for anything to make improvement in your life, then you need to relook at how you're living your life. That's what I reckon.
Ah, kia ora.
Rob McCulloch
actually is another person, just before we close on that. I just do love hearing from Rob. Just so good to hear someone so intelligent and so unafraid to just speak out. According to lawyers, we, the little people, just vote for day-to-day administrators, whereas the profound, unalterable constitutional principles governing us in an enduring sense are written by people with bigger minds. Our judges. Most of us had heard about the principles before, but until the treaty debate was opened recently, we had no idea that they were so embedded into our constitutional arrangements. Many countries have affirmative action programs. However, I know of no country that has a constitutional requirement of outcomes, not opportunities, being equalized amongst the citizenry, other than maybe a few communist states that failed and no longer exist. The reasons are obvious to economists, but not to our judiciary. They may be proud of their equitable outcomes principle, but there is a principle in economics that an inexorable trade-off exists. Attempts to make outcomes equal and equitable lower efficiency and productivity.
That's why we love him so much.
Got anything else?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a few other things that might come up, but we've got a little bit of feedback. Let's chew through that first. Hi, Marty and Marie. Much appreciate your perspectives on current events. Thank you, and to the team at RCR for making these forums possible. Peter from Hamilton. Thank you, Peter. Your idea about the cards you were talking about, popping cards in letterboxes, we could do a card with QR codes and links. That's a really good idea. We've passed that on to the team.
I was thinking about having cards that when someone asked you about something, you had a perspective that had been helped by listening to an RCR program. You could give people a card to allow them. Because a lot of people should be listening to RCR that are not.
Yes, absolutely.
And up to you, listeners, please. Share things and tell people about it. Send links, text them, you know, a link to a show.
And if we're looking at sort of sharing links, right, if you're someone who personally is finding all this HECL stuff a little bit discombobulating, like you're not really too sure about how you feel about it, and you're finding that you're getting negative feelings and you don't want to be feel negative about people, and you need to sort of reassert your positivity around actually positive race relations that we have had in this country, then listen to some of the really good things that are going on, like my interview with Nathan Jury a couple of weeks ago, who is re-establishing Te Pini with his wife and what they're going to be doing for Māori and Pacifica boys. That is tēnā rangatiratanga. That is kahitahitanga. Listen to some of the interviews that we've done with Lee Taitua. There's some really good stuff. Really good stuff going on out there. Accentuate the positive. And then if you're wanting to share some stuff around, if you've got a family member or someone that you're talking to, in this treaty space, in this principle space, we've done multiple interviews with Muriel Newman across breakfast. Dr. Elizabeth Rata, we did a great one with her in September. I definitely know that I listened court and it was incredible. There's actually tons there. In Muriel and Frank Newman's New Zealand Centre for Political Research page, which is just the acronym.co.nz, I think, or .com, they have got article after article after article that you can share. So there's lots of information out there that you can share, and everything shared makes a makes a tremendous difference.
And we really do make an effort to provide some Māori viewpoints that you don't hear. Alfred Ngaro on the political agenda last week, Glenn Inwood on the Fourth Estate. I am loath to be drawn into sides because I do love Māori, despite, you know, my not being blind to some of their cultural things that maybe aren't working for them anymore, that I think we should allow them some shadow work. But I want the same things as a lot of the protesters profess to want. I want safer homes for Māori kids. I want better health outcomes, better economic outcomes. I want them to be able to live as comfortably as they do on the Gold Coast.
Yeah, absolutely. Next one here is from the text machine. There is a Kennedy in the White House. It's been a fabulous week. Go the Don. He's got the X team. Happy household here. Very happy. From Mike. Hi, Mike. Love your show, Marie and Marty. You guys are an awesome team. A message for Marty. Bro, I just love your outlook. I get your humour. If you're ever in Taranaki, I'd love to catch up. I'll buy the coffees. My wife and Jan and I live in a farmland out of town and you'll love it. We'd love to host you if you're up to it. I'd be happy to gather some blokes and let loose on masculinity and manhood. You've got a message that the men of this age need to hear. Everyone needs to get to the West Coast in, at least once a year to maintain some balance and power. So there you go. That's from Mike. So when you need to juice up the bro juice, you know, you can head out.
Yeah, I'm over. I don't know about that.
probably.
Got to put that better, bus. I'm overdue for a trip to the Naki.
Yeah, go the Naki. So thank you again for everyone that sent in feedback. 2057 is the text number. Inbox at realitycheck.radio is the email. And yes, take a look at the zoom out, the bigger pictures, but also to take time, I think, to like what you did. You surrounded yourself with your family on the weekend. You had a great time. And I think sometimes we need to take a moment, take a breath and actually look at all the really wonderful things within family. What makes life good? What makes life special, and that those are the positives that we can take moving forward. And there is actually some really exciting things on the horizon for us. So, you know, don't think that we're trying to bring everything down. We're not.
The darkest hour is before the dawn, people.
There you go. There you go. And do share, as we said. It does make a huge difference. And as Marty mentioned before, in those bites, if you like the look of those bites, our Foundation Members Club is how you access those. And of course, everything you need to know about that is on the Reality Check Radio website.
And right. I can never say enough thanks to our Foundation Club members.
Right. We're going to head off. We're going to head off for another week. We're going to do it all again next week. So you have a good week.
Yeah.
Look after yourself. Yep. And listen out to the interview I've got coming up with Matt Robson. So if you're listening to this in replays, it may already be there by the time you've caught up with us. I think it's going out. I'm recording it later today, and it should be going out on Friday. So I'm looking forward to that.
Thanks very much, Marie. Thanks for all you do. Have a great week, everyone.
All right. Take care.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.